Blog Talk Radio.
Well, folks, welcome to one more edition of Politics Done Right. I'm Egberto Willis, your host. Thank you very much for spending one more Saturday with me. I seem to say that every week. I probably need to change from saying thank you for joining me and saying welcome. And again, it's great that you're here with me one more day. I hope you continue listening to the show over and over again. And do remember that I also do a show at KPFT. 90.1 FM here in Houston, but it can be also streamed at kpft.org. But right now we are on Coffee Party Radio, coffeepartyusa.com, coffeepartyusa.com. And of course, you can learn all about Politics Done Right by going to politicsdoneright.com. Now, again, it seems like the last few shows I've been doing with a very, very heavy heart. I know many of America, many in America are seeing the realities that have always been the realities for some, but for most, mostly undocumented realities. With the advent of all these videos and with the advent of the citizen journalists and with the advent of security cameras everywhere, we're now able to see realities that some never believed were actual realities. The question then becomes, what is done when these realities come forth? What happened? Today I'm going to discuss the Eric Garner killing by New York Police Department officer Daniel Pantaleo. Much is made about having cameras solving much of the problem. While it is true that in departments where cameras are used, there is empirical evidence that it reduces both police brutality and complaints against police, the reality is that is a different issue. There was clear evidence of a murder that appeared on video. American citizens who saw that video chose not to hold the officer accountable. They saw a murder and refused to indict. The only reason one would watch, or one could watch, that video and not indict is to internally deny the humanity of the murdered. What do you think, folks? What are your thoughts? You know, I wrote a blog on Eric Garner, and this one wasn't a very long blog at all. But do remember, folks, this is a call-in show. The number is 646-929-2495. Again, that number is 646-929-2495. Please remember to press 1 if you want to speak, and I'll get to you after the blog of the week. I will definitely get to you. I hope many of you call in, because what I want to hear is I want to hear your thoughts. I want to hear your sensibilities. I want to hear where we may differ, if at all. I want to hear from you. Eric Garner had his hands up without any weapons as police initially assaulted him. He was being harassed supposedly for selling untaxed cigarettes on the corner. At best, a minor offense. The pilferers on Wall Street were never afforded this treatment. Think about it. We all knew the Wall Street guys brought down the economy. We all knew that the Wall Street guys implicitly assassinated Americans by causing their stress, which with that, many committed suicides, many threw themselves out of windows, many simply worried themselves to death, many simply died because they could no longer afford a living. Nobody looked at them with scorn. Yeah, we thought badly about them, but police still never come up. Even when they were taken Madoff down to jail, he was afforded humane treatment. But Eric Garner, this big dude, he was not afforded any type of humane treatment. He was seen as the Hulk, the threat, that big black dude, the menace. Now, for some who say, oh, these guys, you make everything racial. You know, Garner's daughter said something interesting, and then I'll get back to the vlog. But Garner's daughter said something interesting. She was asked, do you think this was a racial incident? And she said, no, I don't think it's a racial incident, because I do think it was a power thing. That guy wanted to show his power to bring down this big dude. And, you know, she could be right. She could be right on this incident. She could be right. But this guy's humanity was denied. And the fact that the humanity of those denied by cops is prevalent among a sect of people makes not necessarily this one incident racial, but the incidents in the aggregate racially motivated by insensitivity, not only by white cops, I must say, because it's not only white cops that treat the inner city or the inner city poor in the same manner. Might I add, there was a sergeant out there, a black sergeant who was the person in command, and she was sitting around kicking stuff also. She also denied the humanity of Eric Garner. So, folks, it's a very complex socio-economic issue with racial biases, not only a thing of, let's say, white officers, but it's a complicated issue. But the ultimate results of this complicated issue is that the lives of some is valued less by many. The lives of some, to some extent, is devalued by most. You know, the police then slammed Eric Garner to the ground and continued with a chokehold, even as Eric Garner pleaded that he could not breathe. The act of murdering him continued. That is what happened, period. The video below shows, and I showed the video in the blog, Garner's murder, along with a very small subset of other black men executed or harassed by the police this year. Only a small subset. Happens all the time. I have corroborated information as well. The video shows that the reality of black interaction with police. Those who chose to not believe these realities are doing a disservice to their fellow Americans. The president had a very well-attended meeting with various members of our society. He had law enforcement. He had clergy. He had rappers, he had intellectuals, and more trying to come up with solutions. The new framework released by the president and his attorney general is based on the following principles as stated at whitehouse.gov. And callers, I see you. I will be with you shortly. Advancing, these are the three tenets of the, or the three principles, or the three statements out of the White House. What are they going to do? Advancing the use of body-worn cameras, and promoting proven community policing initiatives, creating a new task force to promote expansion of the community-oriented policing model, which encourages strong relationships between law enforcement and the communities that they serve as a proven method of fighting crime. Reforming how the federal government equips state and law enforcement, particularly with military-style equipment. Unfortunately, that framework will be a failure before it even begins. After all, the Eric Garner case illustrates that even watching a murder on video will not effect an indictment against a police officer killing a black man. Remember, there was ample video when, who was the guy that says, can we all get along? When, I don't quite remember his name now, but when he was confronted by cops, Rodney King, that's his name, Rodney King. There was ample video for Rodney King, and they all got off until the federal government stepped in. The grand jury is made up of our peers. It is our peers who have seen it fit to allow police officers to get away with the murder of black men, and in a lot of cases, poor others. It is our peers that are actively manufacturing realities to justify their intrinsic prejudices, a prejudice that allows many to throw most of the blame on black men in order to keep their conscience cleared. As a black man, myself, as a Latino man, myself, as a Caribbean man, myself, I tell you all, change will only come when those who think the death of Michael Brown, Eric Garner, and the deaths of all the other black men, the poor folk, by cop as the death of one of their own loved ones. This is not a cancer within the police. The police is just the metastasis of the cancer. And that is the end of the blog that I wrote immediately after the results came out. I was a bit upset when I wrote the blog. Generally don't post those. But this one I needed to post. I have the blog of the week that's going to be appearing on Daily Coast on the front page tomorrow at 4 Central Standard. But I'll leave that for now to get to the call. 912, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Hey, Gina Brown from the Swamplands of Georgia. How you doing?
Gina Brown, I haven't heard from you since, I guess, a couple of Netroots Nations back in, I guess it was, the one in Rhode Island, right? Or Providence, Rhode Island.
Yeah.
I think is the last time I saw you.
Probably so. I definitely went to the last few Netroots Nations. I haven't missed one, and it's been 4 years now.
I don't think I saw you in Detroit.
No, you didn't. I didn't see you either. Of course, I took a kind of a lower profile, a lower key, because I was attending a lot of the sessions and really working hard on learning a little bit more about the modality of Blog Talk Radio, about messaging, and some of the things that, you know, I could come back home with and kind of recoup and regroup and determine the direction that I want it to go, because my elected official...
That is important because that is the reason that we have a Netroots, because it's a matter of teaching folks how to be activists. So tell me, first of all, what you learned, and then we'll jump into Eric Garner.
Well, I'll tell you what I learned at Netroots last in Detroit. I met Rasheen Lamont Rich. Is it Rich? I can't call his name, but he's Jobs for Justice, the young man that has won the award for the new organizer that at last year's Netroots Nation.
Right.
They had a picture of him with the president. We had breakfast together, and he was a very shy and quiet young man, and I myself, believe it or not, can be shy and quiet. And we met and had breakfast, and then we met and spent the day Saturday. I had no idea the young man was winning the award because he walks by faith and not by sight, and surely wasn't bragging about himself. But I was so pleased to see this young man win that award, and you know, recently saw his picture again and have friended him on Facebook and stayed in touch. But the thing is, there's so many of us on the ground that are working in small ways, small areas to try to create this societal and political systems change that we need. And when I saw your headline about, or your topic about the heart, the American heart has got to change. I don't care how many cameras we've got. I mean, it's the systems and political change, systems, social change that we need. So how do we do that? How do we implement that? I mean, that for me has been the pressing question, because as you well know, working in rural Georgia or rural anywhere, we know the KKK is still out here. We know there are still lynchings. We know there are still threats on our local elected officials' lives. I've got folk out here struggling, and it's an everyday thing. So, you know, it's like the squeaky wheel gets the oil, but why is it taking so many deaths of our young black men? Black men in particular. I mean, why? Why in 2014 are we having this conversation? It is a heart. It is a paradigm shift. It's a change that has to come from the people. You know, we've manifested this reality we're living in. I mean, we've manifested it, and we've allowed it to continue.
Yeah, look, it is, when I mentioned it has to be a change in the heart, first of all, the important thing that I wanted to get across is that we're not going to have technical issues solve the problem. Technical issues can change behavior when there's a cost if that behavior isn't changed. That is a fact. But however, when you have when you are presented in a legal system that where regular American citizens are going to make the choices of law enforcement, the rulings that you get for Rodney King, you get the rulings that you got for Eric Garner, you get the rulings you get for Michael Brown. And the reason why is that no matter what happens, it is, you bring it to people, people bring their prejudices in. Now, the question is, you know, you can, if you watch a man getting killed and you cannot, and looking through your eyes, you cannot see that. That is deep within, and that is what, that is what we should be attempting to change. And there's something that this is a change, man. There's a time that Reverend Al, I wasn't a fanatic of Reverend Al during the Tawana Braun case and all these other cases, but I find that good old Rev Al has matured into a real activist, a real representative of social justice, coming from an intellectual point of view, but able to actually get on the ground and talk to folk. That he has grown into that guy. And what he has said is that he, until we make that change, until we actually, and you know, we constantly talk about change and change and change and change. It really isn't enough to simply talk about change. What is going to be very important is for us to implement it. And what he said last week or earlier this week is he said, the thing that concerns me most is where are the churches? Where are the synagogues? Where are the mosques? In other words, you want change, you have to work with people who have influence on those that are affecting the evil. And if those that are effecting the evil are the same ones that are talking about their Christianity, their Muslimism, or their Judaism, or whatever ism they're talking about, where are the leaders in these groups to talk to their pew, to examine their heart and work with them? I mean, you watch the evangelists on TV every Saturday, every Sunday, and see the impact that they can have on their pew, how they work with changing these people's hearts. Why is it that all these major evangelicals, all these major Christians, all these major Jews, all these major Muslims aren't out there together holding hands talking about the change of heart in America?
Yeah, I can tell you that is as a student of behavioral analysis from Savannah State, I look at behavior, and I want to tell you something. There are over 30,000 Christian or religious corporations. Let's call them what they are. They're incorporated. They're corporations.
Right.
You know, you got one that can't drink coffee. You got one you can't take birth control. You got one, and just like a neighbor told me one day, my church wouldn't give to this friend of mine whose home burnt down. What kind of church is that? Because they said she wasn't a member of their church. There goes what you're talking about, the division. You know, churches and religion or Christianity or any ism, like you said, it really is about dividing mankind, and it's not about bringing folk together. And I think that's the reason why no one's going to jump into that fire. They're not going to toss off their Christian robes and dirty themselves with getting into any kind of controversy or conversation about a systems change. Remember, there are a lot of folks making money from the system as it is. Talking about the grand jury and the peers that are making these decisions, I had the greatest opportunity to watch that process here in Glenn County in Brunswick. I was selected for jury duty. And in attending that day-long, I studied the folk and watched. And let me tell you, none of those folks were my peers. They were older, white, uptight. 300 of these folks in one room. I'm telling you, there were folks of color and there were Hispanic and there might have been one Asian or two maybe, comparable to the county where I live out here in rural Georgia. But for the most part, none of those folks, would I say, could be a peer to any of the folks that they were hearing cases of. And I think that's a sad commentary because when your jurist pool gets smaller and smaller, and then you have this familiarity with the system, with the judges, with the clerk of the courts, with all of these folks. I mean, I pray God, Alberto, one thing that comes of this, Ferguson, all of this, the protesting, you know, is that we start lifting up our local communities and look at the DAs, look at the judges, look at these people who are really putting the whipping on our ass. We can't wait on the Christ or the conscience of people, their Christianity, their Christ conscience, to step up to the plate and say, you know, oh, this is an unfair world. We've got to change this. They're not going to do it. It's not to benefit them at all. I mean, come on. This is about getting new recruits and new people to come and tithe at their church. It's a corporation. This is what it is. It's the same way with political system. I look at the two-party system. Sometimes I wonder, is it not a grand illusion? Is it not talking points that are given to the Republicans to make them look so stupid to the left-leaning or liberal progressive who thinks that by factual information and by just knowing what the truth is that we can, you know, tell people and that they're going to come to this conclusion themselves and reason this thing out. But, you know, it's not that. If it is a emotive condition that is necessary to make a change, and it's going to be a struggle. I think we're going to see more activism. I think we're going to see more, you know, I always say we're not coming with pitchforks. We're beating them into plowshares. If we're out here organizing on a local level, you know, we will have your riot in our peaceful, noncompliant way, because that's what I see the message of the 1942 lowest turnout in the midterm elections. People out here are not stupid. Even in rural Georgia, they're not stupid. Matter of fact, they kind of
right.
like it when city folk think they're pretty stupid. But what I've found
right.
in my own work out here is that poor white folk aren't voting. They're like poor black folk. They're trying to put food on the table. This is not a race issue. This is a human issue.
You know, race was never an issue until race needed to be an issue to be a power. And I'm talking several hundred years ago, and I'm not completely schooled in all the technicalities of it. You know, I'm not one of the the historians, but I do know that race only came to place when there needed to be a power structure. But stay with me, Gene. I want to bring 936 in, and we'll continue this conversation. 936, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
You talking about Bruce?
Oh, Bruce, how you doing, Bruce?
Oh, hi there. You are talking to me.
Nice to hear from you, sir.
Well, good to hear from you again, and happy holidays and all that.
Happy holidays to you too, Bruce. How's it going there in Montgomery County?
Well, not too good. Some things about what we're talking about now with going on. We had a black man that was just convicted of vehicle assault, and it was a political type of thing. But let me go back to the case we're talking about here. And I have several subjects that I think ought to be covered. In cop cases, I think we need a special prosecutor so that the prosecutors that work with the cops every day, they don't favor them. The other issue is human rights with respect for everybody, and that's not what's happening now. There are orders from the top, like the New York things, we're going to crack down on quality of life offenses, and remember the stop and frisk and those things that do create a lot of friction with the citizens there that the cops are trying to get hold of. We need training for the policemen, sensitivity training and conflict resolution and how to bring down situations instead of escalating them. We need some attitude adjustments as to what is good for the people that they're trying to police. And we've had in this laws of systems to make people an example. Well, right now they're not making an example of what police are doing in New York and Cleveland and all over the place. So I think all of that ought to be discussed. And so I'm really glad you're having this program so that we can bring out some of these subjects.
Now, I have a question for you, Bruce, and it goes as follows, because I agree with all that you've said, and I think if you look at the three topics that the president decided to that he's covering and going across, blanketing the nation with in the different police departments and trying to get these things talked about, I think a lot of that's involved there. But one of the basic tenets of the show today was how do we get, because remember, with everything that you've just said, you can still have any rogue officer. If 99.9% of the officers are fine, and that one rogue officer met another Eric Garner or a similar situation that Eric Garner and effected the same killing as occurred on Eric Garner and had to be within a grand jury system of our peers as we are, as has happened with Eric Garner, the likelihood is that that police walks. Again, so my question, while I agree with everything that's been said that needed to be done to make better policing, when that rogue cop does what he does and he gets off, it speaks more again about our citizenry at large. So my question to you is, how do we change the hearts of folks to ensure that everyone is humanized as opposed to dehumanizing a sect of the population? What say you?
I say that like in the civil rights cases in the back, back in the 60s, you can't legislate people's morality or what they think. But if you make it against the law and if you bring it forth, then people will say that they can't do it openly. They cannot come out and do something because it's against the law and they'll go to jail. So that's what I meant by let's make an example. There are some bad rogues out there. There's some people, not all policemen are bad. A lot of them are very helpful and deserve the praise that we can give to them. But there are those bad apples, and if we let them off without any justice there, then we're not making an example to any other bad rogues out there that they can't do that. We're giving carte blanche to go out and kill people and disrespect them and exert their power over them. Remember that a cop, he's judge, jury, and executioner. When he's on that beat with a person, then he can do whatever he wants to at that time. And it seems that the society now has backed him up to say that he has to have that power to do any effective police work. And I don't believe that.
And that's what I want to examine. Let me tell you, Bruce, first of all, I have been, and for the audience at large, I'm a Black, I'm a Latino, I'm a Caribbean man. I share all those characteristics who I am. And I've been stopped by the cop several times. And I have got to be honest, most of the stops that I've had, I have been respectful, and the cops have been respectful. So the fact of the matter is, I am not anti-cop. I'm not anti-police. I respect cops. I know that their job is difficult. And I also know that most of them are humane and most of them are nice people. Based on my interaction with them, that's what I have seen. Thus, however, I have seen myself gone to games or going to rallies or going or have been stopped. And know that because of how I look, I have been treated in a condescending way, sometimes in a verbally violent manner, etc. And I understand who those particular role cops are. So I do understand all of that. However, go ahead.
Can I make a statement? Well,
yes,
I am an old white guy. I'm 70. And people look at me that I'm probably conservative and not a Democrat at all, okay? But I have been respected with police and police stops, and we've all been sir and thank you and various things like that. But I have noticed I lived on a cul-de-sac street, and there was a Black man that came down the street, and he was fearful of his life. He couldn't get out of there, and some people in an apartment building were harassing him. So the police were called, and when they came, they treated him as if he was the perpetrator and not the victim. They humiliated him because he had been in jail at one point, and they asked him questions in front of the group of white people that had gathered on the street to help this man out, and we did not appreciate that at all. He needed a ride home. The police weren't going to do that to get him out of the neighborhood where he would be safe. Okay, so we had to take care of him. So
I mean, that is just an amazing story. I wish that. How long ago did that happen, Bruce?
That was in about 1998 or so.
Wow, so it's not even a long
time
story. In Houston,
in the suburbs of Houston.
No,
that is
amazing. You know, yeah, Alberto, what he's talking about, this thing happens all the time. All the time.
Right.
Of course, being white, we're privileged. We live in a privileged life. It wasn't until I married my husband, who was a Black man 15 years ago, that I underwent some of what the stress is like. And then also his children from his prior marriage going through situations where it was a car accident or it was this or that. And the way they were treated, you know, it started to become apparent to me that as a parent, I couldn't even sit back and watch the disparity of my own children, my stepdaughters, my loved ones, my people, because, you know, just like this man is talking, I think we as white folk have always witnessed what happens to good Black folk or innocent Black folk just in any kind of situation. I mean, you can say there's 99% of good cops, but I'm going to disagree with you. And I say that because here in this little city of Brunswick, for example, we had a girl who let her dog out. He got a little chihuahua, got by her, and the animal control center was called, and they put it on Facebook, the little city community. This is how bad communities are. They report each other, but there's no love here about, you know, calling this lady and saying, hey, your dog is out down at the dog park, come get it. They're trying to find its owner. No, the animal control came, knocked on her door, and so they said, you know, it's against the law. There's not a leash law here. And she's like, well, I knew that, but the dog got by me. I got in from work, and I've had a drink. I didn't want to get in my car. I figured he'd be back. Can I have him back? Do you have him? And they said, well, he's in protective custody, and you cannot have him back. And, honey, I'm going to tell you the truth. This is just 4 or 5 months ago right here in Brunswick, Georgia. Two SWAT team, fully militarized police showed up at the back door, two at the front, and one on either side of the house, and a militarized truck. Now, I'm sure they report up the level, up the line, how many times they had to use the SWAT team to make an arrest, how many times they had to pull out the this and that, to make an arrest. And I'm telling you, they are bullying communities, pushing people like a vice, like their head are in the vice, and they're pushing these people to the limit. This was a woman who had never been arrested in her life, 26 years old, beat down her door, came in there like she'd stole something, all because a dog was off a leash. Right here in Brunswick, Georgia. Folks, we need to wake up. This is some deadly shit going on with these militarized police. We need to look at it.
I'd like to speak on that, too.
Sure, go ahead. Go ahead, Bruce. I'll wait. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. It is our society that we have guns everywhere. And out in California, they had some robbers that had armor-piercing guns and automatic weapons, and they held off the police out there for a day until they got them. And the police are not going to be outgunned. So now that everybody has a gun, when you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So if you've got a gun society out there, they are looking for being shot. So they are very scared every time they look at anybody. So what they're going to do is overreact. They're going to be very defensive. They're not going to take people's respect. In the 90s, again, there was an astronaut down in Clear Lake who stopped for a speeding or some traffic violation. I don't know what it was. May have run a stop sign or something. But the cop pulled her out of her car and threw her on the ground and sat on her to handcuff her. That's with an astronaut that is a good citizen in this country. So that attitude of being fearful of anybody that you encounter is going to make you less respectful and to keep people or talk to people with respect.
Well, and the sad thing was, Bruce, that the animal control guy that was the initial contact with the householder alerted the police. She was home alone. This is a woman. She was a white woman. She was home alone. And they still utilized all of this militarized equipment to make this arrest. And to me, it's just about numbers. It's about showing how bad the community is, how they can verify the use of this needed force. And I think they're really promoting and pushing for a rebellious agenda from people. Did you see, Alberto, the post from the New York, in New York, where they used the sound brigade or that sound riot
yes.
breaking sound system on a small group of protesters, for God's sake?
Let me tell you, let me tell you, Gina. First of all, when I was at the we were protesting the water shutoff in Detroit. We were in the park right on Detroit. And they actually used, after we had a permit to go into right in front of the Detroit Lake or the river to have the protest. We had the protest, and for 1 hour, I think it was, and immediately thereafter, once that time was up, they turned that military sound system on that really took people out of the park. That actually occurred to us at Netroots at the Detroit rally. Now, let me tell you also, when I spoke about 99% of we had permission, yes.
You had permission for an hour, then they ran your ass out of there.
Absolutely. Now, when I speak about 99% of police officers being good, I am speaking figuratively, because until we have actual specific numbers, you know, we have to give some deference to our law enforcement. But I share everything that you guys have said thus far. 404, come on in. Who do I have the honor of speaking with? And then I think I have 620. 404, who do I have the honor of speaking
with? Bobby Rodrigo, good afternoon, guys. How is everybody today?
Bobby Rodrigo, how are you doing, my dear brother?
Fantastic, fantastic. Troubled, of course, by the subject of the discussion and, of course, what we're seeing in our society and have seen for a long time. I think that it is paramount for us to remember that, you know, this has been going on a lot longer than it is being talked about. You know, I still find it interesting that you can take a group of people and you can show the video of Rodney King and have different opinions on what happened. It really shows how we're not really looking at things that are right in front of us, black and white. But these things have been going on for a long time. It seems to me one of the things that's going on, and it's a complicated issue for a lot of reasons in my view, but one of the things that are going on and the incident here in Georgia, two incidents here in Georgia where I am, really show this, is the police have kind of eliminated, again, you know my position, Egberto, and some of your callers do, about going back towards the Constitution instead of away from it. Well, one of the ways that they're doing this
right.
is this no-knock warrant stuff that's going on. So you have a gentleman here named David Hooks here in Georgia, Dublin, Georgia. And he's an elderly gentleman, married, and he lives with his wife in his home. And his home got burglarized. And he reported the burglary, the police came out, et cetera, and they caught the burglar that night. So the burglar turns out to be a police informant from the past. And he tells the police that when he burglarized the house, and I don't know the exact whether it was because he burglarized it or discovered it when he got there, but the house was full of drugs. So the police, instead of getting a warrant and going to the house and handing the guy a piece of paper and going and searching his house, they pull up on the house at night in SWAT pulls up on a house at night. Now they know the guy; they just were there. And they pull up at the house with SWAT, et cetera. And, of course, his wife sees these people moving around the house and alerts him to it. And, of course, he just got burglarized. So he grabs his shotgun, which Georgia's an open carry state on top of everything else. He grabs his shotgun. He walks to his front door, doesn't raise the shotgun, doesn't threaten anybody. He opens the door and they kill him. That's exactly what happened. Our police policy gone from tasing, macing, and control to killing, to lethal force. We go from 0 to 100 in 5 seconds. It absolutely, profiling is involved, whether it's racial, whether it's how you look, whether it's what clothes you're on. That's certainly involved. Anybody who thinks that profiling is not involved doesn't understand how police do their own investigations, for that matter. I mean, they're all about profiling. They have people profiling. On contract, we are seeing, and the militarization of the police force is right along with that. They're not telling them to tase. They're not telling them to why, you know, the gentleman who was chokehold, why wasn't he tasered? I mean, that was an illegal chokehold. If you can even come up with the comprehension that this was, that he was resisting, which obviously they must have in the ridiculous grand jury process in order to not get an indictment, why aren't you tasing him and why aren't you macing him with 15% mace? Instead, everything's about lethal force, and we're seeing it time and time and again, and we are seeing it in a disparate amount against the black community, yes, but we're seeing it against all communities. It is not just and that's something else that needs to be discussed, is it's being done against all communities. The guy who was walking down the stairs gets killed. The guy in the Walmart in an open carry state with a toy gun gets shot down. No confrontation, no threatening, nothing, automatically force. We have to stop this, and we need to go to our city councils. We don't need to look to the president. We need to be at our city councils at demanding that they create a policy and accountability and laws that stop the police from behaving this way, period.
Bobby,
in my opinion.
Bobby, you're so right. I'm glad of what you said. We have to do it at the ground level, but what is also very interesting that we have to take note, and I think I don't remember if it's Gina who said it or Bruce, But, you know, everybody in America now, or a plurality of people in America now, they are all armed. So anytime, you know, because the gun lobby has ensured that we just want to arm ourselves, and everybody is armed now, and we can have concealed carry now, and all these different forms of holding guns. So it's almost like the regular folks, I think it's Bruce who said it, are just as equipped as the cops. But I need to bring in, I think this is Jack. Let me bring Jack in, because Jack has been holding as well. So Jack, come on in, my dear brother.
Okay. All right, it reminded me, I wrote a book called Green Power. It's about race. It's not about power. And then my third chapter says about police brutality, it's actually called, where a guy really hits this green man, punches him all over the place. And all, but never, but the thing is, it's all true. And we need to, it's the police unions that are behind all this crap. You got to control these. And it's the only unions that Republicans are for. yeah, that's, I heard that.
Sad.
And
you know why? Wait, Jack. Remember. If you're continuously dwindling in numbers, right? And you are intent on controlling a majority
white people. Yeah.
Right, then it means that you must make peace with the enforcer. So think about that. You're continuously having a smaller group of people that are following you, but yet you want to maintain power. Who is your enforcer?
It's all about power.
Yeah.
Brothers, for example, or it's all about power, and the people should be able to rise up against them. I don't know.
Did you say you wrote that book, Jack?
Yeah, I wrote that book. It's about 40 years ago. Back in the, I finished it in 83. It's about 40 years ago.
Oh, that's good. You must have it. I imagine you don't have it online. It's probably a hard copy now. So if you have extra,
It's in the Library of Congress. It should be in the Library of Congress, and it's a minor consideration. I didn't think it would be that important, but it's gotten to be true now, as it was back in the 70s and 80s, 60s and 70s. That's when I wrote the book.
Absolutely. You know what? I told you Jack was a stud.
Say that again.
In fact, I wasn't wrong about that, was I?
What do you mean a stud?
No.
You're a stud, Jack.
We always said Jack
was
a stud.
I love you.
Hey, Jack, do me a favor, okay? You said it's at the Library of Congress. You have my Facebook. Send me a link or send me the name of the book or whatever so that I can find it. Because what I want to do is for our coffee party members
that have
written books and that.
It's called Green Power.
Okay. Okay, great. I'll look for that.
We got green people from a planet that's maybe 12 and a half light years away from Earth.
Yeah, I would love to take a look
at
what you're
galaxy.
Writing because
it's in the Milky Way galaxy, but it's 12 and a half light years away.
I got you, Jack. Let me bring
discuss
Bruce
my book, but I, but. I think it all has to be done. I think it should be a separate prosecutor. I think grand juries, the way they have to discuss cops, are a joke.
Right.
Yeah. because they are forced by the darn prosecutors.
Jack, do me a favor. I'm going to come back to you when we give our closing statements. Of have your 15 seconds ready. I need to get back to Bruce. I want to see if Bruce have any more to add to the discussion before we change subject. Bruce?
Well, we've been talking about attitudes, and the cops are doing defensive moves. They're being forced to do things like the policies in New York that really are not helpful and should not be used. But they're instructed to go fulfill these policies and things. So if you're going to change things, you're going to have to get to the top as to the attitudes of what they're doing at the NRA with guns around, with what they're doing trying to make a name for themselves with the prosecutors and working with the cops so closely like that. The policies that are coming down from mayors and from so-called experts who are being paid to tell cops how to defend themselves, how to make people take their hands out of their pocket because they might have a knife or something. Things that culturally are disrespectful to a person. To throw a 70-year-old woman down on the ground to arrest her acceptable. To not ask people to put their hands behind their back if they're going to cuff them, to tell them what is happening and why they're doing things. It's so and surprise them, put them in a chokehold, throw them on the ground and get their hands behind them. That is very respectful. And anybody in police custody, even when they're taking into police custody, they become the responsibility of the police. And if they're killed in the custody of a police officer or anyone else in the system, beaten in their jail cell, things, that has to stop. That has to be told that you don't do that to anyone. It's human rights, it's disrespectful, and it's going to just make the whole society turn against our police force and our legal system, which is happening now.
Thank you, Bruce. Bobby, final comment?
Yeah, you know, I'm no fan of the NRA or any of the gun lobbyists for a lot of reasons, but I don't think that's an issue here because all of these instances that are happening are against people who are not armed, nor were they ever in the sense of threatening with any kind of weapon. I mean, certainly Michael Brown wasn't armed. Certainly Eric wasn't armed. Certainly the kid walking down the stairs wasn't armed. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Bruce is absolutely right on what he's talking about as far as due process is concerned, and we need to push back and demand due process, and we have been for a long time. Jack mentions the 60s and 70s. That was a major issue in the 60s and 70s, that the police were not, we weren't allowing due process. People were being thrown under the bus from a judicial standpoint, from the process standpoint, and they weren't getting a fair trial. And that's it's the same thing. There's nothing different there. That's what's going on. We have to demand better.
May I say that
thank you very
you
much,
have
sir.
To have a gun or a weapon or anything in your possession if the police think that you are. There was a black man that asked him for his identification or his car registration. He went back into his car, and they thought he was going to get a gun out. And they shot him and killed him.
And they shot him.
Oh, my God.
Right, okay, got to go to Gina now for her final thoughts. Gina, your final thoughts?
Yeah, it has to be political systems change. I mean, we need to take what we're learning from the ground and organize from the ground up. A political change is not coming from the top. I agree with the guys that this is coming from the top, this militarized movement of the police. We've got to have a movement from the people, from a grassroots movement, and then we need that pivotal part to come from media and from corporations or folks who are just as sad and caught in this system as we are, because it's not going to come from leadership. If anything, it's going to get worse, and I think we just need to be peacefully noncompliant.
I think
right.
you're
so we
absolutely
get the
correct.
Changes Gina. We need, yeah.
Gina, you're absolutely correct. Jack, give me your quick rundown for closing our show, Jack.
Yeah, well, you know, okay, you got to recognize that the police unions are too powerful. It's a matter of power, and you got to curb the influence of the police units that they defend, protect, and defend. A few bad apples in the group like this, like this guy from Cleveland, all right? He's incompetent to serve. He got scared on the rifle range, and he shot this 12-year-old boy in Walmart or wherever it was. You need a curve. It's a matter of power.
Jack, I guess.
And that's what green power is all about. It's power. And you got
to. Well, Jack, we are going to look
people.
Up. Jack, I got to give my closing, Jack. But look, thank you very much, everybody, for calling. Jack, I appreciate your call as usual. You, as Bobby says, you are our stud, buddy. Anyhow, folks, please do remember that Coffee has several shows. We have on Tuesdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, I Take Liberty with my coffee with Bobby Rodrigo, and that's that great voice earlier on as well. On Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern time, we have Lunch with Loudon with Janine Loudon. Janine is the dean of the coffee party, I like to call her. She always keeps us grounded. On Saturdays, 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 Central, you're here with me, Politics Done Right with Egberto Willis. Folks, I appreciate you spending your time here on your Saturday with me. I am honored. Now, please do remember, folks, go to coffeepartyusa.com, coffeepartyusa.com, and join us. There is much that we intend to do. There is much that we are doing. As you know, you cannot depend on a corporatized media to really provide you with the real information or the plethora of information that's out there. There are several cable networks out there, and you can turn to Fox News, ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, CNN, and how come every single network, they're showing the same 5 or 6 or 7 stories. There are hundreds of stories that are going on throughout the world. With that much coverage, with that much media, there's much for you to see. At Coffee Party USA, we have made that pledge that going forward, we will be the media providing information that's current, providing information that is not so obvious, and doing the media, not necessarily as journalists, but as the people who are going to provide what you want, what you should have. So again, thank you very much for spending your time with us. This is Politics Done Right. I'm Egberto Willis. You have a wonderful rest of the afternoon. Bye-bye.